Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
A tool called Name Your Price. Get a grip on your spending like an industrial vice. It's nice. Beats rolling the dice. I prefer brown rice. Don't carry dumbbells when you walk on thin ice. Splash.
Get insurance based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Styles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Mlarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the UNLV Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa, and this is our 2017-18 National Hockey League season inaugural podcast. Thank you guys all for your continued support as we go into the first season with the Golden Knights as being part of the National Hockey League. Definitely going to be an increased focus on the Golden Knights now that there's actually players to talk about, and we're going to be playing games here very shortly. As a matter of fact, rookie camp is on, and I'll be there today posting pictures on our Twitter feed at Vegas Hockey Pod. So tune into the Twitter feed after the podcast. I'll be at the rookie camp all day checking out what things look like down there. We got good news for this season. The show is continuing to expand. We've been picked up by two internet networks, Sportsology and Grandstand Sports Net. I'm going to throw this over to Chris and welcome him into the show, and he can give us all the specifics on that. Good day to you, Chris.
Good day to you, buddy. So Grandstand Sports, you can find it at GrandstandSportsNet.com, and they're on Twitter at Grandstand_SN, and also Sportsology. You can find that's Russ Cohen's site. You can find him on Twitter at Sportsology, and just search for we're going to be part of Sportsology's Blog Talk Radio page as well. So just go to Blog Talk Radio, put in Sportsology, and follow the old brick road. So very excited to join those folks on. And in fact, you know, today starts our September preview show. So we have, today we're doing the Central Division. You know, next week we're doing the Atlantic with Chad Dominguez, who's part of Grandstand Sports, follows the Buffalo Sabres. And in 2 weeks' time, we're doing the Metro Division with Russ Cohen from Sportsology. So it will be great to have both of them
Very
on
nice.
The show. And today we have a good old guest in Matt Pryor to break down the Central, which is a fascinating division. And, of course, the great Dana Lane, which we'll have him just about every week as long as he can make it for the Vegas Lane segment. And don't worry, folks out there, all you J.D. Style fans, we have him last but certainly not least at the end of the month to break down the Pacific. So, and he's with Cali Sports News. So, you know, last year, each year has gotten even better from my perspective. And, sir, I think we're going to have this season's going to be even better than the prior years. I'm really excited about the season coming up, both for the show and the National Hockey League.
Absolutely. And let me full disclosure here. Real life's kind of kicked me in the teeth here for the last month and a half or so, and we wouldn't have this outstanding lineup that we have to kick off the season without Chris's content management and dedication to keeping the show going forward. I kind of texted him earlier in the week, told him that without him right now, the show would be adrift in a windless sea. So Chris, sir, I appreciate your hard work to keep things going while, we were going through everything that we had to go through here in the last 5 to 6 weeks. Just at the very bottom of the scale, try going 3 weeks without the internet nowadays. Even with your phone, not having internet is, I had no idea how embroiled your life. I mean, something as simple as trying to pay your power bill. If you can't just log in, click your app, click make payment and move on with your life. It's unbelievable how far into our lives that the internet has woven itself and lets you try and live without it for 3-4 weeks. And I know it sounds like first world problems and belly aching and whatever, but if anyone wants to give it a shot, and get back to me, you can email me markwarner@vegashockeypodcast.com and let me know what your experiences was. For me, it didn't really work too well at all. So Chris, thank you, sir, for your continued efforts at keeping the show going while we were on our vacation. We were trying to do a couple of shows over the summer and for a lot of reasons, we just couldn't get that done, but we are back. We are live. And it's really good to just be able to sit down and talk hockey and get rid of some of that stuff for the next hour or so, especially with the Dana coming in, focused on some Golden Knights and some UNLV Rebel talk, kick the season off. I'm sure I'll be running into Dana later on at the rookie camp. And then with our good friend Matt Pryor coming in, you can follow him at BigTex1926 on Twitter for all of his Dallas Stars and Florida Panthers content that he posts at thehockeywriters.com. So Chris, first blush out of the gate here, let's break the ice. But other than the Golden Knights joining the National Hockey League, which obviously is the biggest story and is the kickoff to I'll use not kickoff to drop the puck with this year in the National Hockey League, what are we looking at as far as big news to start the season with, sir?
Well, there's been some rumblings that Matt Duchene, it's possible he might be a no-show in training camp. Now, you know, again, apparently his agent and him are not happy. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But just, you know, this could be a story if he does not show up to camp. There was some kind of team outing that he didn't go to. Wasn't mandatory or anything, I believe, with some of the other players. And I guess, you know, his agent, I believe his name is Pat Brisson, if memory serves, was one of the most high-powered agents in the NHL. And from what he has heard, that the Avalanche have gotten a number of solid to offers from Matt Duchene, and offers that what Colorado should be looking for, and they haven't budged from their, you know, high asking price, to say the least. So I don't, you know, that's something to follow. You know, Joe Sakic has been so dug in that I don't know if that would solve the problem, believe it or not. He might just say, okay, fine. You know, so it's a story to watch in terms of September stories. You know, we had Ryan Ellis yesterday. The news broke. He's going to be out for a bit of time.
Yeah.
I believe from knee surgery. So you're not going to see him until January at the earliest, but you know what? As long as he comes back all ready to go, you know, they have plenty of defensemen on that team. Remember, they picked up Emelin from Vegas.
Yes, they did.
To get some extra depth. So they should be fine. Obviously, you know, all the different training camps. And, you know, we're going to be talking about the Central today, and it's a fascinating division to me because while the Avalanche are arguably the worst team in the league, to me, the other six teams are really, really good. I want to get Matt Pryor's thoughts on the Winnipeg Jets as well. To me, that they're a sleeper of mine, so team this year. So this is going to be a real You know what? I mean, I would think if you were, it's most hockey people, Winnipeg aside, the other five teams in the division, if I said to them, you know, they're going to make the Western Conference Finals this year, I don't think anyone would be surprised by that fact.
No, probably not. I'm not really – we talked about it a little bit over the summer where I'm not really sold on what Chicago did in the offseason, and we can get to that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah.
St. Louis seems to have lost more than they've gained. So I – and I'm not a big ticket. Yeah, but when you lose David Perron and – you know, that's not an even trade-off, if you ask me.
Okay.
Braden Schaun's a nice 50-point player. I don't know. I don't want to get too far into it yet, but I think maybe St. Louis
right.
takes a step back. Minnesota was on fire to start the year last year, and then late January, just nosedived.
It's a trade deadline.
Yeah.
They made all those moves, and then they just fell apart. They wouldn't lose a game, and then all of a sudden they added a Martin Hansel, and they added the other kid from Arizona, White, I believe, Ryan White,
yeah.
if memory serves correct. And it looked like deep, and St. Louis went through them. I mean, the games were competitive, but I believe they lost, if memory serves correct, they lost 5 games. So. They have a lot to prove, obviously, with Bruce Boudreau as well. You know, great regular seasons, but early playoff exit. So, you know, can Nashville get back
again.
There again? You know, who am I forgetting here? Nashville. It's a heck of a division, to say the least. And Dallas, of course.
But there's also some
there's
also some question marks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Did anyone make more big moves than Dallas?
I think out of all the teams in the Central Division, the changes that they made will most improve their play. Last year, the theme in the Central Division was every team was almost going through a mini rebuild, it seemed like. And this year, Dallas, and you start at the top with Lindy Ruff, and work your way down with Hitchcock, and Radulov is a risk, I think, a little bit overturned. Bringing in Mark Messot to kind of backstop Klingberg the way he backstopped Carlson, I think that's an under-the-radar move that's going to pay big dividends on that defense.
Absolutely.
And a couple other moves that
yeah, they picked
2 years
up
ago, they were
the
Western Conference Finals. And kind of let, you know, Patrick Sharp go, and Oduya's gone now. So the two guys
yep.
that they brought in 3 years ago that brought that cup experience to the locker room that I'm very high on, they're not there. But then we've got, 5 minutes into the conversation and didn't even mention the fact that their goaltending issues have been solved in a big way with Ben Bishop coming in to anchor the Nets. I really, really like what Dallas did in the offseason.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're going to be right there in the mix. So I think getting off to a good start is going to be key. You don't want to fall too far behind in that Central Division. And I'll give you another teaser. We're only going to predict the top three teams in the Central today, but we're not going to give our wild cards until we do the Pacific. But I can very easily see both wild cards coming out of the Central.
Yeah. I think that's I'd put money on that right now. When you look at the bottom of the Pacific, and you're going to have, in any order, you're going to have Vancouver, Arizona, and Vegas somewhere in the bottom three of that division, and you're going to have Edmonton, Anaheim, and LA somewhere at the top of that division. Okay, where's the wild card come from? Calgary's going to be in the mix, but I'm not sure yet. It may come down to that fifth wild, or that second wild card being between Calgary and Winnipeg.
Yeah, I guess, not to get too far ahead, but one thing to favor the Pacific teams is they're going to have extra games against those teams building towards the future, as you mentioned, whereas the Central, other than Colorado, those in-division games is going to be a tough game no matter who you play. So the schedule will favor the Pacific team, so that might help them a bit in terms of those wild cards. So, but you know, we'll break all that down as the probably in our Pacific show we pick our wild cards and something to follow as the year goes on as well. So, do we have Dana on the line?
I don't see Dana on there yet. I was just gonna say, full disclosure, I'm running around this morning, so I'm. If you hear some ambient noise in the background right now, that's me stopping at the gas station. but I wanted to get, since we're talking about the Pacific just a little bit before Dana does join us, what do you think about the Golden Knights? And what are they, a 25-win team, a 30-win team? What do you there's going to be a lot of people gone at the trade deadline, let's face it.
Right.
Neal's probably going to be
likely.
Gone. So,
yeah.
At that point, are we going to get to 30 wins in Vegas?
Well, I guess there's two points to bring up that in terms of, you know, where are they going to finish? Big question I have with the Knights is, and this would be for anyone given this circumstance, is other than a couple of players, you're going to have 20 players who pretty much have never played with each other, pretty much have
Absolutely.
Never played under Gallant, haven't played under Gallant in his system, new coaches, you know, defensive coaches, special teams coaches, all that. So my question is, you know, the first month to 6 weeks, you know, how are the Knights going to play given that? You know, to me, that is that's a tall hurdle for any group of hockey players, to say the least. So they're going to need really good goaltending out of the gate to help overcome that situation. So, and then you brought an excellent point up in terms of when the trade deadline comes around and Las Vegas is right in the mix of things, which, you know, for a first-year franchise, I mean, stranger things have happened, but probably not. And then I believe they have, is it somewhere around half the roster or players are on their walk year and unrestricted free agents at the end of the year. And, you know, Vegas are either going to extend those players or feel confident they're going to extend whoever out of that group. And the ones they're not, they're getting moved. You know, they're getting moved for future draft picks, future players.
So Dana is on the line. Welcome to the show once again, Dana Lane, Vegas Hockey Hotline host, weekdays 12 to 2 on 1100 AM KSHP here in Las Vegas. The play-by-play voice of UNLV Rebels. General all-around Vegas hockey insider. Dana, welcome to another year with the Vegas Hockey Podcast, sir. It's been too long since we spoke.
No, I agree, man. I'm fired up, as you can imagine, for the upcoming year. I'm at the Vegas Golden Knights practice facility as we speak, where I seem to be living for the last week or so. But it's crazy to think that we're under a month to go before the home opener, when it seems just like yesterday,
right.
I was still wondering whether or not we were getting a team.
Absolutely correct. And I will be seeing you at the Golden Knights practice facility. Turns out, I just went through the big move here, and I am like one block east of the practice facility, right off Fort Apache there. So
there you go.
I will be down there as soon as we're done with this show, sir, and I will be looking forward to buying you a beverage of your choice.
Well, anything that includes the word buying you, I'm in on. So I can't wait to see it.
I will text you when I get there, and we'll definitely get together, sir. But let's kick it off with a little bit of UNLV talk before we dive deep into the Vegas Golden Knights. Break down early season. UNLV Rebel Hockey wins the season kickoff. the move to Division I club hockey, how that's going to affect this team, and just a real quick early season synopsis of what we can expect from the Rebels, sir.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm telling you, just talking to the coaches this week, a lot of them, you know, say, hey, you know, there's a lot of coaches in Division I hockey that keep on telling us that it's going to be a difficult transition and we're going to struggle and this and that. And that may be true and all, but I can tell you this, they've done a great job recruiting. In fact, and this is not to demean the kids that played last year in any way, but I think that there's a definitive difference between the kids that are coming in to play at a D1 program and the kids that were here to play at a Division II program. And I think what's happened is that you have seen from the kids that already were here, you saw a definitive commitment from them over the summer. I've talked to just about all of them now, and there is a definite difference in their commitment to getting to the gym. They committed to nutrition, and they're thicker and they're bigger. They hit harder, and I think they're going to have a lot of success. Their season starts on the road next on the 15th, which is next week at Arizona State. So that's one of the teams and one of the programs that UNLV is kind of following in their footsteps, and more on the NCAA
right.
level. But certainly there's been a relationship between the two programs, and UNLV is going to play more road games than home games, which is a factor of a first-year team in a new division. But I would say the word would be optimistic if you're trying to pinpoint it.
All right. Well, we're definitely looking forward to that, and make sure you guys are interested in the UNLV Rebel Hockey, hop onto their YouTube channel during the games and listen to Dana do the play-by-play and the color analysis, by the way. He's a one-man army up in that booth, so and he does a great job. So make sure when it's time for some Rebel Hockey, even if you're at the rink, throw on YouTube, put your earbuds in, and listen to Dana do a game or two. It's a lot of fun. So now, let's the meat's on the plate, sir. Like you said, back in March 2015, you were the first guy to reach out and offer your assistance with the show, and we're forever in your debt, sir, for all you do for the Vegas Hockey Podcast. And it's been a long time coming, and it seemed like it at times it was just interminably slow, and at times it seemed like it was passing in the blink of an eye. But here we are. Rookie camp is on. You've been there for a little bit. I heard you on the radio this week let's go right to Vadim Shipachov. You've seen him skate a couple times now, I believe. What's your first thoughts of Shipachov and how his skill set is going to fit with the National Hockey League?
Well, I mean, look, you know, I said this before jokingly. I don't have a KHL package, so I haven't been able to watch him. I've read a lot. I've talked to guys that have seen him, and I got to see him definitely very close yesterday and the practice before that. I don't remember seeing him. Doesn't mean he wasn't on the ice, but the guys didn't have the names on the back of the jersey, so I wasn't looking for it. But with that being said, yesterday I thought he looked like he belonged, which I think is the number one thing right off the bat. Do you belong with a bunch of these guys? He was playing with the voluntary, he was in the voluntary practice, and what that basically is the veteran guys that are not required to be here, but can be here if they choose. And of course, everybody came. It was nice to see,
right.
to see Marc-Andre Fleury and Pickard on the ice at the
Absolutely.
Same time. And, you know, honestly, look, he fits in. He was taking pictures with the fans after. He didn't look out of place. But, again, it's the beginning of the process. And, you know, for a guy that does not speak English, for a guy that really doesn't have a guy on the team that he can lean on except for his interpreter, you know, and for a guy that's a long way from home, you know, the NHL season is a long season. And I know that, you know, privately in his thoughts, making $4.5 million a year, there's a lot of pressure because – even myself, you know, we throw out, hey, look, you know, this guy is, I think it's fair to say that we're thinking first year he should be a 50-60 guy, and I think he should creep up into a 60-70
yeah.
guy after that. And then we'll see where he is after that. But George McPhee did not bring him in here to be a 40-point guy, I can tell you that.
No. The one thing that concerns me about what you're saying is he's in a rookie camp with a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and you're saying he fits into that group. I would hope as he gets more comfortable with his surroundings, and obviously it's a huge change coming from the KHL to North America and the language barrier and everything you were just talking about, I would expect by the end of the next couple days of rookie camp for him to be an exceptional standout at 30 years old with international experience rather than just fitting in, as you say.
Well, he was playing with the voluntary camp guys yesterday when I saw him. So it was one side of the ice was the rookie guys. On the other side were the voluntary guys. And that's playing with, you know, that's playing with the guys that are going to be on this team. So he wasn't, that, to my knowledge, I didn't see him, was not skating with the rookie guys. He was out there, you know, with the guy Riley Smith and the guys that are going to play.
Right.
Make a huge impact. So as far as him being part of that group and fitting in, that was encouraging, but you're right. I mean, if he, you know, was playing a course on the other sheet of ice, he would certainly have to stick out.
Sure. So today's schedule there, for anybody listening here in town, I'm looking at it. It starts at 10 o'clock and there's a 45 minute session, I think. And then there's another hour session after that. Is that correct?
The way it worked yesterday is it started at 11:30. They went 45 minutes, and then you went over to the other rank where the starters or the guys that are going to be in, you know, your top six defensemen, things like that. That's where they were playing, and they went for about 2 hours. In fact, Murray Cravens actually skated with them, and, you know, that was kind of cool to see them out there. Now, granted, they're going about 65-70%, but it's still cool to kind of see him out there skating. As to the time, if you've got a time frame, you're a better man than I. I just know that this was supposed to start today at 10:30. It will go about 45 minutes, and then I am assuming that the veterans will be on the other side, although there is a family skate that's going on right now, and then another one that starts at 12. So I'm not sure when or if they're going to fit that other voluntary skate in.
All right, well, before we have to let you go and bring in our guest for the day, I know Chris wants to get in here, so he's been pinging my phone here. I'm trying to be a producer driving around with the show going through my personal hotspot and running the studio board through my iPad while I'm driving, so don't call Metro on me. I'm almost back to the house, so let me bring Chris in and let him finish.
Your show is always going through my personal hotspot.
Thank you, sir. Dan, it's great to
have you. How you doing, Kurt?
Great to have you. Good. It's great to have you back for another year. So, Dana, the big story over the summer, one of them in terms of the rumor mill was, you know, the Golden Knights have all these defensemen. I believe they have 10. Is it 10 or is it 11? Mark Borup.
They have 11 right now.
The top of the show that only Shea Theodore, who's the guy you really want to pencil in, has options. So how do you see this playing out? Have you heard anything? Do you think they'll lose a player on waivers? Do you expect a trade or two? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. And, you know, obviously you still have camp to go through. You know, there could be injuries. McPhee could deal two or three of these guys in that way. I'm pretty sure they're going to carry eight defensemen. So you're looking at either putting, you know, a combination of three, either on waivers or making deals. Now, you know, look, we asked McPhee last week, we said, look, you know, what is ultimately going to happen with this? And the response was, well, we're going to let the players decide that. I don't think he's against putting any of these guys on waivers. I don't know, you know, like, there's a fine line with some of these guys. Like, if you put a Jason Garrison on waivers, of course, he's probably going to clear waivers. But, you know, is that a guy that you want down playing in Chicago making $4.6 million? Probably not. And I think what all this stems around is the fact that they're trying to find a way to get Shea Theodore in the lineup because he's the only guy that, you know, really, he's your best defenseman there, but everybody else – you're looking at waivers. So, you know, Brad Hunt is probably a waiver guy. Perhaps John Merrill, although John Merrill skated really well so far. Maybe Clayton Stoner, although, you know, that's a guy that's probably going to clear. You know, so I think they're going to make a deal before the season starts, which would only get them to the point where they would only have to deal with two of these guys. I know Bill Foley told us that the cap would be around $60 million to start the year. They're about $69 right now. So do I think that they thought that they were going to be in a position where they were going to have an abundance of defensemen at this point? No, I don't think so. I think that McPhee overextended and over-exaggerated maybe what the market would be on defensemen. But there's still some wiggle room with camp coming, you know, opening for most teams. And we know that there's going to be injuries. And of course, Vegas, with a glutton of defensemen, would be the first team that any team would probably look to.
Yeah, absolutely. You never want to see another player get hurt, but that's the scenario for him to get the coverage back on. Where, let's say, if that compared defenseman goes down from Dallas, who's already kind of young on defense,
right.
That's where McPhee can up his price and go back into the market from a position of strength, to where I agree with you that he may have overplayed his hand on the defensemen and perhaps a couple of the goalies that were on the expansion list. If you had kind of evened your choices between maybe adding a couple goalies in lieu of a couple of those defensemen, you might have had a better market for yourself. But I'm not going to criticize this franchise from day one. They've, from all appearances, almost everything they touch so far is turning into gold. And I'm not close by any stretch of the imagination where George McPhee still has plenty of options available to turn those into gold as well. So,
And keep in mind, too, from a defensive standpoint, there's eight of these guys next year are either UFAs or RFAs. In fact, five of them are UFAs. So
right.
If George loses one without compensation, look at a guy like Jason Garrison. Even if they end up losing him, that obviously wasn't the focus point of that deal. But they have,
right.
And I think you were alluding to it earlier, there's 15 guys on this roster that are going to be UFAs or RFAs next year. So what we see here is nothing compared to what we're going to see next year. And these guys are just pawns in the game, like we've been saying from day one, to get to where they really want to be.
Absolutely correct, sir. And as always, sir, great talking to you. We got Matt Pryor on the line to go through a little bit of the Central Division. Real quick with you, since we got you on the line as a parting shot for the ninth, if they had a prop bet on the board and you could pick three teams that the Golden Knights were going to be in front of in the standings at the season end, and I went in there and said Colorado, Phoenix, and Vancouver, am I going to cash that ticket?
I would say you have a really good chance of doing that. I mean, we were talking to a couple guys that are going to do the Vancouver games this year, and I almost asked the question. I said, you know, how many teams do you think the Canucks are going to be better than? Which was going to be a loaded question because I wanted them to hit the Golden Knights, but I think the Knights have a real chance of being better than people think. I trust the sports folks in some ways because, you know, they're not putting a 70 out there as a token number. I think they have the opinion that the Knights are going to be a better team. And they, unfortunately, in order to get to that 70 mark, they're going to have to win 30 games. And I don't know if they're capable of winning those 30 games, but I do know they're going to be a lot better than Colorado that, if I'm not mistaken, basically returns the same crappy team that they had last year.
Yeah, pretty much. It's our Central Division preview, and I don't see us spending too much time on Colorado. So I think that one is going to be I like that pick. I like that pick. Dana, sir, I will see you in about 45 minutes to an hour over at the training camp. And if you go on the Twitter feed, for the training facility there, they do have times posted. I can't pull it up right now. I'm just getting into the house and in front of my computer. But there is a schedule posted for today. And I'll give you a holler when I get there, buddy. Thank you for doing the show.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me on.
Talk to you next week, Kenneth.
And now we're going to bring in our Central Division guru who contributes heavily to the Hockey Writers for the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers, and achieved the Vegas Hockey Podcast Hall of Fame being in our introduction, so to speak. Sir Matt Pryor, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I have to say it's quite an honor to be in the Hall of Fame. And if I had known that this was going to come about, I would have worn pants today.
Good thing you have a face for radio, sir.
That is true.
Okay, buddy. We're looking at the Central Division today. You guys can follow Matt on Twitter at BigTex1926 for all of his Dallas Stars and Florida Panthers content. Today we're going to focus on his Dallas Stars expertise. And I believe for a couple reasons that Dallas is worthy of leading off the Central Division talk. Number one, there's so much to cover with what they've done in the offseason that it deserves it. I know last season when we were talking about this division, Chicago, St. Louis, Dallas, Winnipeg, they'd all gone through what almost seemed like many rebuilds in the offseason. And aside from Chicago moving Panarin, I think even including Chicago moving Panarin, I believe Dallas has made the most impactful, significant moves in the offseason, perhaps in the entire NHL. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, you know, I honestly would say the only team that comes close in terms of significant roster changes is Vegas.
There you go.
Dallas.
There you go.
Dallas had a huge, huge offseason, and Jim Neal, I have to say, he really knocked it out of the park. I mean, every need the Stars had, he addressed in order, you know, starting with the coaching change. You know, right after the regular season, Lindy Ruff's contract was up, and so enter Ken Hitchcock. Then the Stars need a goalie, so he goes out and he sends a fourth-round draft pick to the Kings for Ben Bishop. And lo and behold, on July 1st, here comes Martin Hansel. And then a couple days later, there's Radulov. And then, of course, getting ex-Golden Knight Mark Messier, that's another huge acquisition that the team is really going to benefit from. So I think Neal did everything he could to set this team up for success this year, and now it's on the players and coaches to make it happen.
I want to obviously the biggest, I mean, the two glaring weaknesses, even the Western Conference final team notwithstanding, has been goaltending and defensive depth with this franchise for a number of years. Ever since bringing in Niemi at that ridiculous cap hit that they did, that to me, bringing in Bishop, and I was hoping that Bishop would be the Golden Knight. Didn't work out that way. But to bring in a two-time Vezina finalist, still a young man, Cup Finals experience, all of the things that you look for in a franchise goaltender, that need is addressed. I wanted to specifically get your take on what Mark Messier is going to do to free up Klingberg as sort of his safety net, as he's very familiar with that role, backing up Carlson for all these years. What is that going to do to let Klingberg take his game to the next level?
Well, you know, you used the key phrase right there, safety net. Messier, because of his experience with Erik Karlsson, I think it's going to be a very easy transition for him to to riding shotgun with Klingberg. And I believe it's going to give Klingberg the confidence that he needs to try things, to be more creative with the puck, knowing that Mathot is going to be there to cover for him when things go south, as they will from time to time. And
sure,
it's going to help Klingberg take the next step. You know, he's already the best offensive defenseman the Stars have had since Sergei Zubov. But he's not at Zubov's level yet. But even Zubov, as much as the Stars and their fans loved him, the guy was good for one egregious turnover every game. That was one of his trademarks. But you could forgive that because of all the great things he did with the puck. And I can see Klingberg moving in the same direction when paired with Mathot. So that was a huge get for the Stars, no question.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you were to look ahead and crystal ball this thing, one more on the Stars, and then I'll bring Chris in, and we'll look at the Hawks and the rest of the teams in the division. Radulov only scored more than 20 goals one time in his career, and he's now in that upper echelon of salary and term on the team. Does this work out, or is this short term? And then you're gonna be in kind of a bad deal, hard to move contract situation.
You know, I think it's too soon to tell because we haven't seen him skate with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin yet, but I believe that's sure. Where he's going to end up. And I think in the end, if all of these moves result in the Stars bringing the cup back to Dallas for the first time since 99, I think in the long run, no one's going to care about the last half of Radulov's deal. On the other hand, you know, if it doesn't work out, yeah, the last two or three years of that contract could be painful. But as of right now, I don't have any indication that might be the case. I think we're just going to have to get into this season and see how they look.
Is this a team that can win a Stanley Cup in the next 3 years?
I really believe so. You know, 2 years ago, they finished atop the Western Conference, and they did it with suspect defense and goaltending. And I think what we're going to see now is the right combination of players and coaching. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Ken Hitchcock, but I think bringing in Rick Wilson as assistant is equally significant because, you know, he was Hitch's assistant in St. Louis, and St. Louis last year, I believe their penalty kill was ranked third in the league, and the Stars, of course, they were 30th, I believe. Certainly no higher than 29th. I'm pretty sure they were 30th, and that's going to change. And, you know, Wilson was Hitch's assistant in his first stint with the Stars, and Craig Ludwig said something when these hires were made. He said, with Rick Wilson, every defenseman is going to know his role. He's going to know where to be on the ice at all times. And there's going to be accountability, and that's not something that you saw a whole lot under Lindy Ruff. It was a different regime, a different system, and I think the team as a whole is going to benefit. And I think there is tremendous potential for really good things the next few years in Dallas.
All right. I agree with you. I don't want to give away. We'll do our picks later in the show. But I think where 2 years ago or before last season, I was not a fan of the moves that were made. And not that I'm any sort of guru or anything, but the results bared out on the ice. And a lot of that was caused by injuries, don't get me wrong. I am a fan of what Dallas has done in the offseason, and I do look for them to be at or near the top of this division. I think the perennial powers of the division have some holes, some of them self-inflicted, some of them just cap casualties and time. And I think Dallas might be right place, right time in this division. We'll get more into that at the end of the show. Let me bring in Chris. I know we got to get moving along off the Dallas Stars. I appreciate your expertise on that franchise. Those are very well done. Chris, let's move on in the division. Who do you want to do next, sir?
Yeah, I want to talk to Matt about the Blackhawks. And again, everyone, you can follow Matt at he writes for the Hockey Writers. He's a senior writer on the Dallas Stars, also pitches in with the Florida Panthers. You could find him, give him a great follow, and check out his articles. You can find him on Twitter at BigTex1926. Matt, it's been too long, but let me start off with this one for you on the Blackhawks. Am I crazy, Matt, but with the lack of depth on the blue line, questions in goal after Crawford, the loss of Marian Hossa for the year due to his situation, the questions of, in terms of their secondary scoring and the division that they're in, that the Blackhawks could miss the playoffs this year? Am I crazy for making that statement?
Well, you know, you're stealing my thunder. You're taking away my bold prediction, Chris.
Uh-oh.
No, I really,
I say you are crazy.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I think you hit the nail on the head. All the way down the line, the Blackhawks, they are thinner at forward. They're thinner on D. They're thinner in goal. So, you know, you can when you talk about keys to success for any team in the league, of course, being healthy is key. And we saw with Dallas last year what happens when the injury ninja strikes repeatedly within a short period of time. It's disastrous. But with Chicago, they don't need multiple injuries to fall off a cliff. They just need to suffer injuries to any of their big guns, you know, Kane, Taves, Keith, and Crawford. If any of those four guys are out for an extended period of time, they are in real trouble this year.
No, I agree. I mean, they're going with an AHL goalie as their backup. I mean, maybe he's ready for the NHL, but they got in the Saad trade, but I think there's some serious questions there. And this one, you might think I'm crazy, but I tell you, I am really high on the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, the way I look at it, and again, you tell me if I'm crazy, I think they're going to make the playoffs. You know, believe it or not, they only missed the playoffs last year by a few points. Granted, Steve Mason is not Ben Bishop, but he's a huge upgrade over Pavlik. And if Hollebuck can get a little bit better, and now maybe with Mason there, he might not feel like, you know, the whole franchise is on his shoulders. You know, remember, too, they didn't have Jacob Trouba the first 2 months of the year due to his contract situation. You know all about Dmitry Kulikov, which I think was kind of an under-the-radar free agent signing. And, you know, we're imagine if Joe Amara, Marco Danino, and Kyle Connor, if guys like that can really be strong in terms of secondary scoring with their first two lines, where this team could be. What is your thoughts on the Jets? Should I be as high as on them? Am I giving the glass way too half full picture, or what's your thoughts on the Jets?
Well, you know, as you're talking, Chris, I'm looking at my notes that I produced in preparation for this show, and I don't recall sending you a copy of my notes, but you seem to be reading from them.
We think alike, except when it comes to the Islanders.
Yes. Yes, and you know, as far as that goes, all I'm going to say is Trocheck was tripped, and it should have been called. But that aside, coming back to Winnipeg, I agree with you. I think you've got in the Jets, a young, exciting, and huge team. I mean, here's a fun fact. The Jets have 6 forwards and 4 defensemen who are 6'3" or taller. They're just an enormous team physically, and they've got the talent. I mean, with Line A and Shifley and Wheeler and the defense, like you said, Trouba, you know, I was not sold on Jacob Trouba when he was holding out, you know, wanted to be traded and all this. I thought, okay, the guy's contract demands are ridiculous. He hasn't proven himself yet. He's not worth what he's asking in my mind. But once he started playing and I saw him in action, I was sold. So the only question now where Trouba is concerned is, can the Jets keep him? I think bringing in Steve Mason was a great move. It's a bit of a gamble maybe, but overall, I think Mason is going to shore up the goaltending position. He's going to take some of the pressure off Hellebuck, and having a competent goalie is going to breed confidence throughout the team. And so, yeah, I suspect that when April rolls around, they will be in the playoffs, and Chicago will not.
Before I get you, I have one last quite big question for you on the rookies, but before I get to and kick you over to Mark, you know Kulikov well from his days in Florida, and obviously the Jets, you know, as well as they played offensively last year, they obviously need to tune things up, if you will, in their own end. What do you think Kulikov, I know he didn't have a great year with Buffalo last year, he was injured a lot, but a healthy Kulikov, what can he do for this Jets team?
A healthy Kulikov is going to be defensively sound. He might not be as much of a two-way defenseman as they might like, but he's going to be sound in his own end. And he, you know, that of course was an issue for Winnipeg last year. They scored on par with some of the top teams in the league, but they also allowed far too many goals. And so the combination of Kulikov and Mason, it's going to cut down on their goals against, which is going to translate to more wins, more points, and again, a playoff berth. So in a nutshell, Kulikov is going to help them take a step forward and into the playoffs.
So before I kick you back to Mark there, Matt, in doing my prepping for the season, it was interesting. A common theme kept coming up, and I counted a number of guys in the Central Division who are going to be rookies this year, who I think could have an impact. You know, I'm curious how you feel. Do you have 2 or 3 guys everyone should watch out for in terms of young guys, young rookies in the Central this year?
I do. I think, for starters in Minnesota, Joel Eriksson-Ek, he's a center, and it looks like he's going to probably center their third line. And so he probably won't put up the points he could otherwise if he were, say, playing wing in the top 6. But as third line center, I think he'll make a greater contribution to the team. And he's highly skilled. He's a playmaker, and he's Minnesota's future top line center. And he's going to be exciting to watch. And I would peg him as a Calder candidate. With Chicago, Alex DeBrincat, you know, highly skilled winger. From what I'm hearing and reading, it sounds like he could end up on Patrick Kane's line. And if so, you know, we saw what that did for Panarin last season. And so DeBrincat should benefit from that. Now, having said that, I think perhaps playing on Patrick Kane's line and the benefit of doing so may push him to the back of the Calder line. but I think he's another one to look out for. And also, Calder or no, playing on Kane's line should make DeBrincat very attractive to fantasy GMs. And the third rookie to watch is Julius Honka of the Stars. This kid is incredibly talented. He's unflappable, and he is occasionally feisty. He could actually, in the long run, he could be better than John Klingberg. And I would say for Honka, a 40-point rookie campaign while playing on the second D pair and the second power play unit is quite possible. And I would go so far as to label Honka a dark horse Calder candidate.
Well, I'm going to kick you back to Mark. I'll probably have one parting question. But, Mark, I left you Minnesota, Nashville, and St. Louis. So ask away here.
But you don't want to break down the Avalanche, is that what you're saying?
Oh, that's right. I forgot Colorado. That's right.
Easy to do, sir. Okay, well,
I think they're on the clock, by the way, for the 2018 draft.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, sir. I won't be surprised. We're not going to spend too much time in Colorado this time around. But I did want to get up to Minnesota because aside from Dallas, they have quite the number of roster changes this year. They came out of the gate last year on fire and were you know, leading the division well into January and up to the trade deadline were very competitive and fell off a cliff. Dubnyk's play went down. I think he was letting in half to 0.70 more goals per game after the goalie pad change than before. And I don't know if that was attributed to what was going on in his head about the goalie pads or whether it was the smaller pads themselves. I think there's the question of can Dubnyk bounce back from the way he finished the season? They've lost a couple of long time Minnesota Wild players, Pominville, big hit on defense, Marco Scandella, who many thought may have been picked up by Vegas. Instead, they took Eric Holla and Alex Tuck, who are gone. Darcy Kemper's gone. There's quite a roster turnover there. Boudreau's going to have his hands full in his second season there. Are they a top three team in this division as currently constituted? I don't think. I mean, I like bringing in Matt Cullen for sure. Minnesota boy comes home, three Stanley Cups in his pocket. You bring that into the locker room, where I would argue that's one of the things this team has been missing over the last few seasons is that type of experience. You guys both know I'm big on having cup experience in the room and what that does for all the other players around them. And their core is getting older with, you know, Parise and Suter locking up huge portions of that salary cap and have not been able to get anything done in the playoffs. What are we to make of this installment from the Minnesota Wild, Matt?
Well, you know, I think they are they definitely did not take a step forward this summer. It remains to be seen whether they actually took a step back. I agree with you. Moving Pominville, losing Scandella, losing Holla might actually be the most significant short-term loss that I think they might feel that one more so than any of the others this season. Long-term,
right? But combine that with losing Martin Hanzel too. Depth at center is going to be a problem there.
That's true, and that's why Erickson Ek and his adjustment to the rigors of the NHL schedule is going to be key, because he's got to center the third line, and if he wears down, you know, because I believe this is going to be his first 82 game season, if he wears down, as a lot of rookies do, they're going to have problems, or if Koivu or Stahl get hurt, and he has to step up into a top six role. Is he going to be ready for that? And
right.
So yeah, their center depth is questionable. I think they're still pretty strong on the wings, but Parisi, he's got to rebound. Last year was his worst season since his rookie campaign. I mean, points wise.
Yeah.
His lowest production since the 2005-06 season. And over the last 3 years, he's missed 33 games. And his production has dropped an average of 10 points per season over that span. So he's got to turn it around, especially for what they're paying him and for the number of years remaining on his deal. And yeah. And then, of course, the Minnesota's defense, their top four, their top four is solid, but their third D pair is questionable. And we saw with Nashville last spring, when you have to rely so heavily on your top four, if you feel like you can't trust your bottom D pair in the playoffs, and especially if you get into overtime games and get into multiple overtimes, that's a problem. You've got to be able to trust that third D pair. And they're going to have Quincy, Murphy, Riley, and Olofsson battling in camp for the final three spots on defense. And it's anybody's guess as to who ends up on that third pair and who the seventh defenseman is. We'll have to see. But, yeah, I think they're going to be a playoff team still, but I don't necessarily see them in the top three in the Central Division.
And for a second there, I think you were going to sing the praises of Vegas' of Alex Tuck. But getting Holla and Tuck out of Minnesota when most prognosticators had him taking Scandella or Dumba or you know, one of those two guys. What do you make of them going center forward with those two players to Vegas? And what can you tell us about Alex Tuck going forward?
Well, I think Holla and Tuck are great pickups for the Golden Knights. I think they're going to benefit this season from Holla. I'm guessing he's going to be on the third line, and he can play center or wing. He's a good physical presence. He's got a little bit of skill. He's defensively sound. So he's the type of player that a lot of teams, most teams would love to have on the roster. So that's a good pickup.
Right.
Now, Alex Tuck, he's highly skilled. I haven't seen a whole lot of him in action, but from what I've read, highly skilled. I'd like to see him playing in Vegas this season. I think that would be very interesting, and I think the fans are going to really like him. But hey, if he needs another year before coming to the NHL, so be it. I think he will benefit and the team will benefit as well. But that's another great pickup for Vegas.
We can see, you guys touched on it a little bit earlier. We could see Minnesota take kind of a significant step back this year, I think. And if you're, prognostications on Winnipeg bear fruit. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Winnipeg, you know, if you miss the playoffs, you got to look at someone who's going to miss the playoffs in front of you to advance, right? This could be a team in the Central that falls. Maybe depending on if Dubnyk can rebound, this could be a team that goes from in to out and opens up a playoff spot for some of the other guys in the division. That's an interesting team to look at, Minnesota. I'm not really sure where I want to go with them yet. But well, let's go to our Western Conference representatives, Nashville Predators, who gave Pittsburgh all they could handle, despite being basically down their top two centermen, and eliminated the Ducks in spite of losing their centerman, Ryan Johansson, in that late in that series. We're still able to close the door on the Ducks. I don't know if that's more of a statement about the Ducks and where their goaltending is, and, or just how deep and good this Nashville Predators team is. Maybe a combination of both. They had some significant players that won't be back. Neal's in Vegas. But then they brought in some players that make the defense already one of the best defenses in the National Hockey League better. They bring Alexi Imelin, former Vegas Golden Knight. Is this a better squad than we saw last year, despite the subtraction of Neal and a couple of the other guys?
You know, Nashville's another one. I don't know exactly if they're going to be better, but I don't think they're going to be any worse. Like you said, Neal is gone now, but I think Kevin Fiala, if he can be fully recovered from his horrific injury, frankly, I'm stunned that he's going to be able to play again. But if he can put that behind him and be 100%, I think he can more than make up for the loss of Neal. You know, they moved Colin Wilson, another forward, moved him to Colorado. But, you know, he had consistency issues. So he gets a fresh start in Colorado. And I think they're essentially replacing him with Pontus Åberg. And I think Åberg is going to be a good one. I was really impressed with him in the playoffs. He's got a lot of high-end skill. And, you know, of course, Mike Fisher retired, and they replaced him with Nick Bonino. I think that's a fantastic pickup. And of course, they brought in Scotty Hartnell, too.
Yes.
So, you know, I think the Predators, they have long been the NHL's pickup truck. You know, they're tough, dependable, but gotcha. Perhaps lacking speed and high-end style. And what we saw last spring in the playoffs is that the Predators have evolved, and they've still got that toughness and that dependability, but now they've got considerable speed and style in Forsberg and Arvidsson and Johansson and so on. And so I think they're a very dangerous team. Even with Ryan Ellis being on the shelf until around January 1st, like you said, they brought in Yemelin. I think they're going to be solid. The only question I have really, other than Fiala's health and ability to return to form and progress, is how quickly they can put last season behind them. You know, you always talk about the Stanley Cup hangover where the cup winners are concerned, but for the runners up, it's an issue as well. And the Predators play 4 of their first 10 games and 7 of their first 20 against Central Division opponents. So if they don't shake off that post-cup run funk soon, they could find themselves in a hole within the division. It's not something they can't overcome, but I think it may be enough to keep them from finishing first in the division.
Yesterday the news came that Ryan Ellis was going to be out 3 to 4 months. One of the deepest decors in the National Hockey League, and also maybe the best puck possession, puck moving combination of defensemen that they have in the National Hockey League as well. This team is probably one of the teams you would say is most able to absorb a loss of that magnitude for that long a period of time. Does that slow them down at all, or do you think just structure and system, Coach Laviolette is just going to absorb it? Someone's going to step up and off they go.
You know, I don't think it's going to slow them down that much, because like you said, they've got so much depth on the blue line, so much talent there in Subban and Yossi and Ekholm and bringing in Alexei Imelin. I think, I think they're not going to feel that loss as much as a lot of other teams would. And the fact that he should be back around January 1st, that's good for both him and the team because it gives him plenty of time to get back up to speed before the playoffs. Now, if for some reason he's out later, and I'm still a bit unclear on when he had the surgery because I read that he could be out 4 to 6 months, and then they said January 1st, but if he just recently had the surgery, he could be out until as late as March 1st, and that
right,
might be a bit of a different
reporting on that.
Assuming he comes back January 1st, it's plenty of time for him to get back up to speed and for the team to make adjustments. Then you bump Emlyn down to the third pair, and I think, you know, Nashville is going to go into the playoffs with, unlike last year, with 3 D pairs that they can count on in virtually any situation.
Yeah, barring injuries, I think you're right. And I don't see anything, you know, Neil's the leader in the room, but I don't see a lack of leadership on that club. Don't avoid for that, but even with Neil being in Vegas. So I think the Catfish might be playing again shortly in Nashville. Let's move on to the last game I want to get to today. St. Louis Blues. Pretty easy to break down their offseason. I guess their main addition is Braden Schenn. I mean, he's a nice 50-point player. He brings a little bit of two-way grit with him too. Losing Ryan Reeves, Jordy Lehtera, and David Perron, and Scotty Upshaw, I believe more than nice bringing in Brady Chan, Bennett, and.
You're breaking up there, Mark.
I think this might be a team that is also headed in the wrong direction, Matt.
I think bringing in Schenn was definitely a good move. You know, one of the issues they had last year was the inconsistency scoring-wise among their forwards and their centers in particular. So I suspect Schenn is going to play center in St. Louis, and that's going to help. Now, they also have an issue, I think, of being thin on the right wing, because after Tarasenko, it looks like they're going to have Barbashev, Yaskin and Bennett down the right wing, and Barbashev played what 30 some odd games last year. Yaskin is a bottom six winger. Bennett's a bit of a wild card. I don't know that he's reached his full potential yet. So can those guys get the job done? If Tarasenko gets hurt, of course, I think they've got real problems because he scored 39 goals for them last year, and Patrick Berglund was second on the team with 23 goals, and no one else scored 20. So that is an issue. Yeah, they're kind of I think with Tarasenko they're kind of a one trick pony, and they'll go as far as he can take them. Another issue is the change in coaching staff. You know, Mike Yeo, this is officially his team this year, and they brought in a new staff of assistants to help him out, including former Dallas Stars Daryl Sador and Steve Ott. But like I mentioned earlier with the Stars, Rick Wilson coached the Blues penalty kill, and they were number 3 in the league last year. Can they maintain that with a new coaching staff? I don't know. I don't know that they've let me rephrase that. They did not take a step forward this summer, but
I agree.
I don't know that they've taken a huge step back, and the fact that they seem to be healthy, they're a playoff team yet again. They made the playoffs six consecutive seasons, and I don't see any reason why they won't make it seven.
Okay, Matt. Well, that's gonna wrap it up. Chris, I know has he wants to get your take on a short blurb on the Florida Panthers, Chris.
Yeah, Matt, you know, I think obviously last year was a very disappointing season for the Panthers. You write about them as well. From afar, looking at it, you know, I know he didn't have a great year, but neither did a lot of the Panthers. You know, losing Riley Smith and Marchessault to Vegas in different ways and replacing them with Verbata and Dandino, I don't know if that's – I question if that's an upgrade personally. I know Ekblad should be a lot better. I know they lost Huberto for half the year, and then when he came back, he was great. But the Longo's a year older. They're in the right division. I mean, if they were to me in the Metro or the Central, I would not feel like they've had a good chance at the playoffs. But try to convince me in terms of why Florida is going to make the playoffs in the East.
Well, you know, they have definitely had an interesting offseason. Like you said, I think Dale Tallon spent the summer undoing as much of Tom Rowe's work as possible. And though I haven't heard confirmation of this, my theory is that losing Marchessault to Vegas in the expansion draft was really part of the deal to unload Riley Smith's contract. Because that's the only thing that makes sense about exposing a 30-goal scorer in the expansion draft, considering that only 26 players in the entire league scored 30 or more goals last year. So those guys gone. My sense is that Tallon would have liked to move Jason Demers too, but his cap hit of 4.5 mil for this season and three more after – it's more than almost half the league could take on right now. Demers, for the foreseeable future, is still a Panther, and with that in mind, I would expect little to no change to the defensive top six. There's been talk about Ian McCoshin cracking the lineup, but I really think you're going to see D pairs of Matheson and Ekblad, Yandel and Demers, and then Petrovic and Pesek. That's going to be your top six. As far as Luongo, he's got hip and groin issues, and he's had surgery, and it's just one of those things that I think he's going to have to live with. I don't know that he's going to be 100% for the rest of his career, and so I think this is the year we see James Reimer take over as the starter. So Luongo will probably still see 30 starts. The key is the replacements for Marchessault, Smith, Jussi Jokinen, and Jaromir Jagr. And as you mentioned, Verbata and Dodonov, I think some guys to keep your eyes on, in particular, of course, Owen Tippett. I think there's a good chance he makes the team. He might be third line right wing with Nick Bjugstad at center, and the Panthers need Bjugstad to be healthy and put it together this year. This is, I think, a make or break year for Nick Bjugstad. But another guy to watch, Henrik Hoppala. This to me is maybe the most under the radar signing of the summer. Hoppala was the leading scorer in the Finnish Liga last year, and he is a first-class playmaker. He had 15 goals and 45 assists in Finland last year, and he's probably going to be on the second line with Trocheck and Verbata, and if he adapts to the NHL quickly, I think he's going to be a big surprise for a lot of people. Overall, I'm going to be very interested to see what rookie head coach Bob Bugner does with this bunch. I think it's really on him to construct a good system and get the players to buy in. And if if he can pull that off, then I think, yes, the Panthers could slip into a wild card spot.
Oh, and you got Jackie Capuano behind the bench there, too, as an assistant.
That's true. That's true. And I would love to ask him about the trip on Trocheck. That's my goal.
Before we let you go, real quick, give us your top. Give us who's one, who's two, and who's three in the Central.
I got to go with Dallas at number one. Huge changes and all for the better. So Dallas at number one. I'm going to go with St. Louis in second place and Nashville third.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. Well, that, folks,
well, hey, man, if you're gonna harp on Chris about Trocheck and the chip, I'm gonna bring up someone else's feet and where they shouldn't have been belonging. How about Brett Hull's foot in the crease there, Mr. Dallas guy, huh? Hey, huh?
You watch the replay.
Talk about some feet.
you watch the replay. He had possession of the puck. He kicked it to his stick blade. He had possession. It was a good play. It was a good goal. And hey, whose
foot
names are on
the crease,
cup?
Sir. Foot was in the crease, sir. That was doesn't matter where the puck was. Foot was in the crease. That was the rule at the time. Anyway, sir, thank you very much for joining us on our inaugural 2017-18 cast. Really appreciate having you on, as always, sir. It's always a good time talking hockey with you. Make sure everybody follows Matt at BigTech1926 on Twitter. Go over to thehockeywriters.com and look up all his Dallas Stars and Florida Panthers content. He's knowledgeable about the entire NHL, but when it comes to those two teams, I'd stack him up against anybody. He covers them as well as anybody I've seen. So it's always a pleasure to have Matt with us. Sir, we will definitely have you back as usual throughout the season when circumstances in either Dallas or Florida Panthers arise. And good luck to you and your squads this season, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, buddy. So we've gone a little long, but to wrap up, why don't you give me your top three for the Central, and I'll give you my top three, and then we'll set everyone up for next week.
Doing my homework for this division, I'm, and it's not just because Dallas and Matt were on. I really like what Dallas did in the offseason. Their biggest problem has been goaltending, and Ben Bishop is more than an answer, in my opinion. I'm a big Bishop fan. I haven't made any bones about that over the years here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. And to solidify your goalie, not just by finding somebody second stringer who could maybe come in and start, or taking a chance on a vet and hopefully being able to move Naomi or whatever. I think they hit a home run in that, and I really like what Dallas did with the rest I think Radulov with Ben Sagan could be the best, highest scoring line in all of the National Hockey League. We've seen what Ben and Sagan can do when they're healthy, and putting Radulov there as well. He's only had one season. I said this during the show that he's only had one season where he scored 20 goals or more. I would look for him to have 30 goals this season if everything works right in Dallas. Maybe not so much in a Ken Hitchcock season, but if he can get 25, 50, 60, you know what I'm saying? 25 goals, 50, 60 points. And Bishop comes in and just plays adequate up to his standard, I think Dallas wins the division. Nashville isn't really the regular season team, as you could say the Washington Capitals. Their style lends itself more to the playoffs, like the Kings did early in the decade, where they make the playoffs on the second or the last day of the season, and then once they're in, they win the Stanley Cup. That's Nashville to me. I still have them second place in the division. I think It may not be an exciting thing to watch as a la Dallas or Pittsburgh as they go through the regular season, but the defense and if Pecorini stays healthy, he's 34 now and he had a deep playoff run. So if he can come out of the gate fresh and the team can get off to a good start, like Nashville in the second slot, and you guys are quick to kill the beast, but I've said it before, you can't kill Chicago until Chicago is dead. Excuse me. And I have Chicago in the third spot in that division. I've tried to write them off. You know, every year they're cap crunch and move this guy and that guy had to go and Sod's gone, Sharp's gone. Or do Bufflin go back to all those years when they'd lost. You know what? Chicago finds a way. And I if there was any other way to keep Panarin there to skate with Kane, I thought that was so much fun to watch those two players together last year and the dynamic that they did offensively. Great to watch. I want to say wish they would have found a way to hang on to that player, and maybe that was change for change sake and bringing Sharp back, who's been injury prone in the last year in Dallas, and maybe on the downside, speed and skill wise, bringing that back in a veteran presence to help. I don't know if that's the right decision to go in Chicago, but Chicago finds a way. That's who they are. It's what they do. And barring injuries and whatever else you guys got into where you guys are both putting them out of the playoffs, Chicago finishes third in the division.
Well, I'll go the opposite way. To three, I see the Dallas Stars. I think they're going to have a solid season, to say the least. Obviously, the key is keeping Ben Bishop healthy, to say the least. You know, new system with Ken Hitchcock. There is a lot of young defensemen on that team. Dan Hauhus, who's a veteran blue liner, is a year older. Like you said, I see them come. Yeah, see them coming in third. Nashville, very high on. They're one of the, they have as good a chance as any to represent the West in the Cup final, but this is a regular season prediction. You know, they had a very long year last year. It was a new experience for most of the people on that team. So losing Ellis for the first half of the season, give or take, I see Nashville, contending for first place, but probably finishing up second. And I'm going to go against the grain from both what you, Matt, were saying. There are a lot of questions on Minnesota. But to me, you know, when you have their top six, Koivu, Randall, Norwood, Coils, Eric Staal, Niederreiter, and then when you're looking at guys like Erickson Ek and even Parisi, you know, being on the third line and Foligno being on the fourth line, you look at their top four defense and Suter, Spurgeon, Dumper, and Brodin. And while Duke Nick did struggle down the stretch, the whole team did. And if you look at, obviously he was, I believe he was a Vezina finalist. He had a tremendous year last year. So, in terms of the regular season, and also keep in mind they didn't have to run the spring gauntlet. They lost in the first round compared to Nashville. So I think they'll be a little bit of a fresher team from that standpoint. So that in the end could be the difference of them, winning the division. But again, at the end of the day, other than home ice, the bottom line is just finishing in your top three, if you will. It's really at that point about home ice and potential matchups and how well that lines up. But that's my top three. So next week we will have Chad Dominguez of Grandstand Sports of the Beyond the Blade podcast, Buffalo Sabres writer, podcaster. He'll break down the Atlantic. And, of course, Dean Elaine will be back breaking down the Knights. And with that, I think we've had a great first show to the new season, my friend.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Vegas Hockey Pod. Go to iTunes, Vegas Hockey Podcast, all one word. And inaugural season launching with Grandstand Sports Net. Follow them on Twitter as well with Russ Cohen Sportsology page. One last shout out. I was looking through our analytics here. We've got about 30 seconds left, but Sweden has bumped up to almost 15% of our listenership. They were running around 3 to 5 through most of last season. And I think the addition of Vonnerstrom through the draft, 15% of our listen since June has come from our friends over in Sweden. So we are going to do some cool stuff for you guys. We're going to keep our eye on our Swedish prospects and keep you guys up to date with that as much as we can, because it's just fantastic having friends over in Sweden that pay attention and age of technology even know who we are. So
next week I'll break down Linus Sonnerstrom of the New York Islanders.
Put that in there, and we'll do a special segment in Breaking the Ice. Or we can put it at the end of the show. So do a little homework, and we'll have a little special teaser for our friends in Sweden next week. But for that, next week we're probably going to go back to our same time, 11 o'clock, I believe, Saturday morning, Pacific. I got to confirm that with the boys. But for now, we're going to tentatively set next week at 11 o'clock for our Atlantic Division preview. So until then, for Chris, I'm Mark. We're gone.
Napa Know How. Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.